Welcome to the Denver Medical Study Group Healthcare Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hadley, with the Denver Medical Study Group. It's my pleasure today to visit with Beth Beckman, Chief Nurse Executive of Yale New Haven Health System and Associate Dean of Clinical Partnership at Yale School of Nursing. Beth is the inaugural Chief Nursing Executive for Yale New Haven Health System, and under her leadership, Yale New Haven Health System is establishing a signature standard of nursing care focused on patient-centered clinical excellence. Beth, thank you for joining me today. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure, Chris. Thanks so much for having me. I've been a nurse for 44 years. Hard to kind of believe that. And I have to say, I've loved every minute of my nursing career. So I've had work experience in Arizona, in Texas, and now on the East Coast here in Connecticut. And I've done just about everything, including bedside in a multitude of areas. If you were to ask me, I'm an ED nurse. I've been a CNO, a family nurse practitioner, a CNO, COO, and now assistant chief nurse executive.
Wow. Well, I'm impressed.
It's just a long career. That's all. Just a long
is career. Is that it? Okay.
That's the secret sauce to that. Just stay around long enough and you'll pick up a few extra jobs.
Yeah. Well, as chief nurse executive, what are the three or four main issues that you're, I believe you said you had 7,400 nurses?
That's about right. Yep.
What are they dealing with on the front lines?
Yeah. If your question is for today, Chris, without a doubt, the top three are workforce, workforce, and workforce. We are hyper-focused on what's been the aftermath of COVID and how do we get back to where we need to be to create work environments and joy in the job like we used to have and a workforce that's stable. And that is really what most of the nurse executives across the nation are dealing with today.
Wow. How has the pandemic created many pressure points and impacted the supply and demand of nurses?
Yeah, that's been a really interesting thing to watch. I would bet if you asked most of us, what is the most unbelievable thing that could happen in healthcare under your watch, it would have been hard to describe what's happened as it relates to workforce. And when I say that, you know, we knew going into it, into the pandemic, that we were having a looming nursing shortage, primarily due to the grain of the nursing workforce. We also knew that our demand line was going up because of the grain of the communities. And then COVID hit. And we really had three different tranches of what happened to nursing and nurses within COVID. The first was an unbelievable, unpredictable, hard to know what to do and how to treat and how to stay safe period of time of clinical practice. But that first tranche, you know, which started for us in February of 2020, probably went through December of 2020, was a time of celebration and recognition for what nurses do. People around the world were banging pots and pans and recognizing what nurses were doing and understanding how important nurses were to patient outcomes. And we all pretty much thought that this wouldn't last that long. And so the celebration kept everyone in place, head down. Everyone was taking care of patients the best they could, managing through the fear. As it went on and it became more chronic and nurses started to respond to the high acuity and high mortality they saw in the first tranche, they started to experience PTSD and things that they probably hadn't ever experienced in their life before. And some of our nurses have known nothing but COVID. They went to school in it, they graduated in it, and they don't know anything else but that. And that's really very sad to think about. But in that second tranche, we started to deal with the emotional distress and all that, you know, happened as we watched patients die without their family. And the number of disciplines that really stepped away while nursing stepped in. You know, we tried to keep all workforces safe and EVS and social workers and pastoral care and phlebotomy and housekeepers, they all stepped away and nurses picked up other jobs and it just became a lot to deal with. Then came, you know, people evaluating what they're going to do with their life and how they're going to do it. And the third tranche hint, which was people started to make permanent changes in their employment. I call it the Great Migration. They didn't really resign, so it wasn't the Great Resignation, but they started to migrate to other areas that were less stressful. Maybe ambulatory settings that were 9 to 5, moved away from ED and ICU, which was crushing. A lot of them decided to capitalize on the high dollar period of traveler funds, who knew how long it was going to last, but they could pay off student loans and buy homes that, you know, were a once in a lifetime opportunity. So they started to migrate to different jobs, and that created workforce instability like we've probably never seen before. And therein lies the aftermath of what we're living today. And even those that didn't quit and they stayed with us, maybe a lot of them moved to per diem, meaning I'll work when I want and when I can. And they took on traveler jobs and maybe even created periods of personal respite for themselves. And those that were traveling and making 4 to 5 times normal amount, instead of working a total of, you know, 52 weeks a year, they may be taking half time off and still financially able to pay their bills. So they were creating a respite for themselves through the financial equation, working out for self-care. So it's been an interesting dynamic and one difficult to figure out how to manage.
Well, I'm sure it has. The travel nursing aspect of it, is that declining some now, or is it still pretty active? What's going on there?
Yeah, I think we've seen it declining a bit in two ways. Number one, the rates that are being charged, and number two, the number of people who are actually traveling. I think pre-pandemic, there was less than 50,000 travelers. In the middle of the pandemic, there were probably 100,000 travelers, and it was quite unique for us. So only time will tell. I think that will really depend on what happens with future surges from COVID and what it is we're dealing with.
When the Delta variant hit, from a layperson's perspective, it seemed like that was the beginning of the nurses saying, I'm out of here. Yeah. It's time to do something else. But there's also something, a term that has recently come up called quiet quitting. And I don't know if that's in, is that in healthcare as well? What, how does that fit in with our nurses?
I think, you know, I've read about that as well, Chris, and I understand what that means and the lack of engagement and the lack of being all in to problem solve at a time where we need everyone all in. I wouldn't be real if I didn't admit that some of that's going on. But I guess my hope is that, you know, we'll rally during this time and we'll find our way to solutions. And there are no nurses that I know of that will quietly quit on patients. And when it comes to managing patients and patient outcomes, they come in every day with their tennis shoes on, ready to run. And so I do not see that being the heart and soul of nurses, but I do see them wanting more time off, and I do see them wanting more work-life balance. And so I think those things are really real. And I think it's incumbent upon us as employers to figure out how we manage that work-life balance with them and for them, that it doesn't have to be we tell them what to do, but that together we figure out what to do to afford them to be happy in their job.
Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
What strategies did the C-suites use to counter the exodus from nursing? And are these solutions working?
Yeah. I think, you know, we have short-term strategies and we have long-term strategies. The short-term strategies included hiring on travelers to backfill to make sure that we had enough nurses to take care of our patients. That was never going to be our long-term strategy. Our long-term strategy has to be we uniquely and in a superlative way distinguish ourselves from everybody else relative to this is a great place to work. I don't know if you've heard of ANCC's magnet designation, but these are organizations that attract and retain talent during times of, you know, shortages. And there are, you know, principles that include shared governance inviting the voice of the front line to help you solve problems, principles of excellence, and ensuring that these are learning and divisions of nursing that are very dedicated to data and quality outcomes. And that's a place where a nurse can be proud to work. So I think we need to double down on those principles that we know work, because in our history, during times of shortage, these places had a waiting list while others couldn't get anyone to interview. And word of mouth in the nursing community is really strong. And wow. So our job is to distinguish ourselves.
I know. I remember in conversation we had last week, you talked about three areas. One, safety,
yeah,
and quality,
yeah,
and finances.
Yeah.
And we're starting to hear a lot more about health system finances than we have in the past.
Yeah.
What are you seeing or hearing, and what's causing that problem with health system finances?
Let me speak for my nursing colleagues, because when we went to nursing school, none of us had any accounting courses, any finance or economic courses. We were clinically and, you know, scientifically trained to get ready for this role. Healthcare is uniquely living in a zone of low margin. Strong hospitals and hospital systems are running anywhere from 3 to 6% margin. So on every dollar taken in, not charged, but every dollar taken in, they make 3 to 6 pennies to reinvest in their organizations for nonprofit. That's not a big margin. And when your salaries go 4 to 5 times more, there's an imbalance there. Everybody that is reporting out on what's going on in healthcare finance, it's related to unexpected and overinflated salaries. And so that imbalance is probably unrealistic and needs to find its way back to a norm. I think the norm won't ever be what it was before. I think, you know, the value of nurses and the salaries that they'll receive will always be, you know, more inflated than they were pre-COVID. But we've got to get back to a sense of reasonableness.
So what problems exist when trying to expand the nursing pipeline?
Yeah, that's always tricky. So for as long as I've been a nurse, a nursing faculty shortage has always been in play. And we've never solved for it. But when you're talking about expanding the pipeline of nurses, you're talking about new nurses. And there are two lanes of effort. One is faculty, and the other is clinical placements. I think we're in a point right now, and actually we launched in March of this year a nursing expansion program that over the next 4 years will, above and beyond what we normally did serving students, will actually graduate 557 more students above and beyond what we had previously planned. And that is enough to staff a medium-sized hospital. So we have to solve for the two problems. We are working in partnership with our academic colleagues to make sure that those of us that are master's and above prepared can work as faculty. And then we're kind of reimagining, recreating what clinical placements look like. I think we've stayed in a mindset of what that must be. And now we're moving towards, okay, so how could we create a clinical experience that will get them what they need, but maybe in an ambulatory setting, or maybe psych doesn't have to be in a psych unit. Maybe it can be in an ICU. So we're reimagining and, figuring out ways that students can get what they need without giving up anything.
In our conversation before, I read something about you are the inaugural chief nurse executive. Yeah. What were they doing before you got there, Beth?
Well, so I think the value of the system CNE has only emerged probably within the last decade. And it is really knitting together divisions of nursing so that there's one care signature, and that the quality and the standards at the highest level exist everywhere. And so they probably lived in more singular lanes, and now they think together, move together, decide together in faster, quicker ways than we've ever done. So I'm glad I'm here. It's been fun to do. I bet at first they didn't know what to do with me, but I had actually grown up in a system that had a very strong chief nurse executive, Dr. Rosemary LaGuire, and I learned a lot from her, watching her in a great strength within the division of nursing. So,
It's always nice to have a mentor, isn't it?
oh, absolutely. Someone
Yeah.
smarter and brighter and ahead of you to kind of pave the way of learning. So, yes.
I've got three of those, and there probably are many more, but I've got three that I work with like that.
Yeah.
This has been great to visit with you today about what's going on at Yale New Haven Health System and your role as Chief Nurse Executive. Is there anything you'd like to add to our discussion today?
If I could add anything at all, it would be, crisis invites opportunity. Sometimes the noise around you becomes so daunting that you can't really see or find the joy in your job. And, when you are in circumstances like we've been post-COVID or even in the middle of COVID, it identifies for everyone change that can and should occur. And I would tell any nurse out there, shake off any feelings of despair and stand tall and move forward and help solve the problems, because there are open ears and open doors in ways that we've never had before. And I think it would be a shame to miss that opportunity.
Good point. Very good point. Well, I thank you so much for your time today and wish you the best in your role there. And look forward to catching up with you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity.
You bet.
Thank you.